This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
Those who are affected, those who have lost everything, those who have lost most of their crops, it's going to be another 12 months before the next harvest comes around. So they are going to need sustained support.
That's Gerald Bourke of the World Food Program on farmers who lost their crops to Cyclone Kenneth. Details coming up also. Fighting has been fierce around the Libyan capital Tripoli. And the main theme this year on this World Press Freedom Day is media for democracy in times of disinformation. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, with the start of the Muslim holiday month of Ramadan looming Sunday, many residents of Tripoli already are deprived as they face the period of abstinence. Those who already have fled the fighting around the Libyan capital couldn't take much with them. Those who stayed have watched prices rise as supplies diminish and stalemated fighting fosters fear. Fierce fighting was reported again overnight and into today, particularly near key facilities, as the forces of General Khalifa Haftar continue to try to capture the city from the Government of National Accord. VOA correspondent Heather Murdoch is in Tripoli. Today, she updates us on the situation in the battered city.
Soldiers say fighting has been fierce around the Libyan capital Tripoli overnight and throughout Friday, with neither side moving much as they battle for key strategic points around the city, including a hospital, the airport, and important supply lines held by the eastern forces of Khalifa Haftar. Haftar's forces are known as the Libyan National Army, and this fight began in early April when Haftar announced his intention to take over Tripoli in a few days. Since then, the Western forces, known as the Government of National Accord, based in Tripoli, has mostly stopped Haftar's forces in the suburbs surrounding the city. But local officials say more than 45,000 people have been displaced in this conflict, and at least 22 civilians have been killed. And as the fight continues, analysts say any concise military victory would mean a tragedy for the local populations, and the only real way out is a political solution. Reporting from Tripoli in Libya, I'm Heather Murdoch, VOA News.
That was VOA correspondent Heather Murdoch. Mozambique is struggling to cope with a second major tropical cyclone, Kenneth, which hit the nation's northeastern corner with widespread destruction and flooding on April 25th. VOA spoke with UN World Food Program's Gerald Bourke, who describes the immense challenges facing both disaster responders and the people of Mozambique, who will need help for months to come. Relief groups are struggling to work because the storm devastated infrastructure and flooding makes areas impassable and hinders the ability to reach people trapped inland. Bourke talks about the scale of the damage from Cyclone Kenneth.
The National Disaster Management Agency estimates that more than 200,000 people in Cabo Delgado were directly affected by the cyclone and subsequent flooding. That's a very large number of people, and the number is essentially provisional because we and others haven't yet gotten out to all the affected areas.
Bourke says his organization has only been able to reach about 25,000 people in Cyclone Kenneth's impact area, mostly by helicopter, as is true for many other relief groups. Bourke adds that for people in Kenneth's path, this lack of access to emergency food compounds a long-standing situation in that part of Mozambique.
This is a very poor part of Mozambique. Its malnutrition rates are much higher than the national average, and the national rate is in fact one of the highest in Africa.
When Cyclone Idai hit Mozambique in March in the area around Beira, it wiped out crops that were close to harvest, compelling the WFP and other relief groups to first provide immediate food assistance and then start draining flooded farmland and then working to get it replanted for the next harvest months from now. This situation means the people there will need to be helped until then and perhaps beyond. Bork says the people in Pemba and northeast Mozambique face the same situation now because of Cyclone Kenneth.
Most of those affected by both cyclones are smallholder farmers. In fact, 80% of Mozambique's population rely on agriculture for their livelihoods. So yes, large areas of cropland and farmland wiped out right before the annual harvest. And in most parts of the country, there tends to be just a single harvest. So those who are affected, those who have lost everything, those who have lost most of their crops, it's going to be another 12 months before the next harvest comes around. So they are going to need sustained support. It's not just about emergency food for a few weeks. It's going to be a massive rebuilding of livelihoods of communities to help them to get back on their feet.
The WFP official says the cyclone storm surged, pushed salt water far inland, ruining water supplies for drinking and crop irrigation. The International Federation of the Red Cross in Pemba tells VOA that the region's flooding, as is true in the area hit by tropical cyclone Idai, has created unsanitary conditions that bring the risks of disease such as cholera and dysentery. For the WFP, the Red Cross, and for the aid groups, Mozambique's double disasters pose major challenges, including the need for more funding. You're listening to African News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehiz Fuhib in Washington. Thirteen past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Fighting has been fierce around the Libyan capital Tripoli, and Mozambique's back-to-back cyclone disasters poses major challenges, including the need for more funding for aid relief. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Research ahead of South Africa's election on May 8th indicates the governing African National Congress, or ANC, could lose a large number of votes to the Economic Freedom Fighters, or EFF, party. One poll by the London-based Institute of Race Relations suggests the Economic Freedom Fighters would win more than 12% of the vote, double the total from the 2014 election. The EFF promises to truly emancipate the country by taking the land and the economy away from white settlers and giving it all to black South Africans. Darren Taylor reports.
The police shoot tear gas at EFF supporters smashing Johannesburg store windows, the aftermath of one of the party's many protests that have turned violent. The EFF has a central command and calls its members revolutionary soldiers. They wear uniforms with red berets and matching overalls to show solidarity with the working poor. The University of Johannesburg's Adam Habib is one of many political observers who describe the EFF as proto-fascist.
It's particularly violent, it's particularly militaristic, it's particularly focused on spectacle, it is particularly focused on the aggrandizement of the individual leader. I think it's a very, very dangerous party.
The EFF's communications team did not honor several interview appointments with VOA. The party's leader, or commander-in-chief, as he calls himself, is a charismatic 37-year-old, former ANC youth leader, Julius Malema. He sometimes uses his parliamentary privilege to incite the poor to invade land.
We are going to occupy land. Yes. South Africa, occupy land. That's who we are.
You will leave the house.
Political commentator Melanie Verwoerd says people are afraid of the EFF because its racist messages take South Africa back to a time when it was on the brink of a race war.
Of course, what people fear is a sort of populist uprising and that you end up in a very dangerous situation for South Africa. And of course, they do push...
If it's ever in government, says the EFF, it will seize all banks, mines and land and dole the wealth out to impoverished blacks.
The first thing to knock on the head is that the EFF represents the poor and the downtrodden, and that is absolutely untrue.
Professor Stephen Friedman is the director of South Africa's Institute for the Study of Democracy. He says research has shown that the average income levels of EFF supporters are much higher than those of ANC voters.
The EFF is fundamentally a middle-class party. It represents middle-class black people who feel that despite the fact that they now have the qualifications and the opportunities that their parents and grandparents didn't have, that they still encounter the same white racial attitudes that their parents and grandparents encountered. And this obviously makes people...
Habib says few South Africans are fooled by the EFF's promise to make them prosperous overnight. He says the party is drawing its support from elsewhere, specifically from black professionals.
The ones who've done best, because what they want is to be given their opportunity at the feeding trough. The ANC has hogged that for a certain select few, and the EFF is promising access to the feeding trough for another layer of the professional classes.
Habib believes the EFF is also backed by another group of citizens who feel excluded from ruling party pledges of jobs and economic opportunities.
Angry young people who have a reason to be angry because they've been promised one thing by the ANC and got the direct opposite.
Despite this, and despite surveys which show otherwise, Habib doesn't expect the EFF to improve much at the ballot box.
The more the EFF becomes racist, the more it engages in the violence, the more it engages in crashing stores, the more South Africans get repelled.
Friedman says that at this stage, the EFF has a small group of die-hard supporters, but not much more. Verwoerd says the prospect of the party's growth lies in a future South Africa that's unable to ensure livelihoods for millions of jobless young people. I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Johannesburg.
An election governing body in Malawi has done its first test of a system that tallies election results as the May 21st polls draw near. Testing of the results management system is meant to find weaknesses and glitches. As Lamek Masina reports, officials hope Tuesday's exercise will help calm fears of election rigging.
Officials placed staff and equipment at election centers across Malawi to transmit results to the military center in Blanta. Jenny Ansa, chairperson for the Malawi Electoral Commission, says the test exercise is meant to calm fears that election results might be tampered with.
This is one of the issues of transparency. We invited people to come and witness this test run. And I believe as they witness the test run, they will be assured that there is no reason or any basis for any fears of hacking the system.
However, the test did uncover network glitches in the results management system, especially at voting centers in rural areas. The test exercise began nearly an hour late because of connectivity problems. Some tally centers in southern Malawi, like in Sanje District, failed to transmit results to the main tally center. Kenneth Piri represented the main opposition Malawi Congress Party during the exercise. He expressed satisfaction with how the system is working, but noted concerns about connectivity issues.
We may have challenges like maybe when it comes to sending informations, like others are in the remote areas, obviously the phones will be off or maybe network problems. So it's a question of instead of relying on the scanning documents, we should also have a way of sending information from the polling station to the main tally center.
Election officials vowed that the glitches found during the test run will be fixed by the time voters go to the polls on May 21.
Apart from that, you know, the system is still paper-based. So it's not just that which is transmitted, but we have a fallback position because our ballots are paper. So we believe that since the political parties' representatives are here, they will be able to relay the information to their principals, and people's fears of rigging will be allayed.
Incumbent President Peter Mutharika is seeking second term, and his own Vice President Saulos Klaus Chilima is seeking unseated Mutharika. During the campaign, both have been accusing each other of planning to rig the elections. Mutharika claims Chilima is conniving with local telecommunication companies, a charge Chilima denies. Meanwhile, the Vice President has accused Mutharika's government of buying a machine it plans to use to rig the upcoming poll, a claim the president has denied. Richard Cox is an elections advisor with the United Nations Development Program. He told VOA that politicians themselves can generate fears about election rigging.
What we say is, where there are genuine, provable concerns on electoral fraud, please use the institutions and the processes that are already in place to address those. But where the accusation is not grounded in any reality or proven reality, please be cautious, because what you're doing is you're disenfranchising the electorate by doing that.
Cox says the elections results management system tested in Malawi has been used in other countries in Africa.
There was no issue that the manner in which tally sheets were being scanned and transmitted. So, you know, we are confident that the system should yield results in terms of reliability, efficiency and security that should inspire some confidence.
The Election Commission plans another more targeted test run at sites that experienced problems before the poll takes place later this month. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
In a trajectory apart from autocratic trends in Africa, the new Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed is lifting restrictions on the media and freeing detained bloggers and journalists. Websites and TV stations that had been blocked are coming back. Voice of America's Africa Division Director Neguse Mengesha was able to return to his home country for the first time in four decades. He shares his story of meeting the Prime Minister as part of a personal journey of press freedom.
My name is Neguse Mengesha. I'm the Director of the Africa Division, Voice of America. I used to work in my home country, Ethiopia. Actually, I worked under very difficult circumstances. There was total censorship. There's no freedom of the press. So imagine as a journalist, you're not free to report. I had to flee Ethiopia, that's the late 70s, because I could not really practice my profession. I could not write freely. I could not speak freely. So I had to flee the country. It took me about 4 or 5 months, actually, to cross from Ethiopia to Sudan. And I ended up in a refugee camp in Sudan. As a refugee, you really go through so much difficulties. You lose your identity. You lose yourself, who you are. You don't have a passport. You don't have even an ID. You don't have food to eat. You have to depend on the United Nations and Russians. You see? So I saw that, I went through that. When people talk about refugees, the plight of refugees, their suffering, I feel it, I know it. Not only that, as a reporter, since I came here, 1982, I was employed. Then the whole in 1980s, early 90s, I traveled to Sudan. There were over 1 million Ethiopian refugees. As the former refugee now started reporting about the refugees, giving them the voice, Amharic program, actually, Voice America, became the voice for the voiceless in the refugee camp. Close to 40 years. I was not allowed to go in Ethiopia. I requested, actually, 5 times to get a visa. I went back October 13, 2018. That was an experience. Yeah. I don't even know how to explain it, to be honest. It's just, first I had a lot of anxiety. The idea of going back home after so many years. You know, it's a guy, you go back there to visit the living ones and the dead ones. I was never there when my mom died. In fact, my mom came several times here, so almost for 25 years. I have seen her. But when she was sick, for the last days, I was not with her. I have never seen my dad. I missed him. He missed me. Without seeing each other, he died. My highlight is definitely to see my mom's and my dad's burial site and meeting the new prime minister. I thanked him for opening up the political space, for allowing the media to operate freely. And actually, we're planning to strengthen our presence in that country. Hopefully, one day we'll have a VOA 24/7. I said, at the end of my visit, this is the most beautiful thing. That meeting for me was very, very important. Freedom of the press is close to my heart. I have seen journalists killed because they wrote freely, because they exposed corruption, mismanagement, or also injustice. So they wrote about it. So they lost their life. Still today, really many parts of Africa has serious problem in terms of the freedom of the press, free thought, free flow of information. So there is a big difference. Reporting here is like sitting in a paradise. You have all the freedom to research, to look for stories, report fact-based, of course, look for the balance. You can do that. You can criticize. But you can also give them positive stories. I think you have all the freedom compared to our colleagues on the continent. Hope is extremely important. If you lose hope, I think you lose yourself. So the dream and the hope became the truth. It just really happened. I was very happy to be back home.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and our engineer, Nick Ivanov, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Want to relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music. And Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
How much do you know about HIV, the virus that causes AIDS? Do you know that you cannot get HIV from toilet seat or a drinking glass? HIV is transmitted through blood and bodily fluids, primarily through sexual contact. One way to protect yourself if you are sexually active is to be sure to use a condom. Condoms can reduce the risk of getting or transmitting HIV by up to 98%.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.